It's blood money. Those types of national accounts are blood money. They'll put you out of business. You'll be the busiest you've ever been and have no money.
Hey everyone, this is Justin and you're listening to the Pursuit of Profit podcast. Welcome back and I hope you enjoy this episode with Ryan Parsons, CEO of Evive Brands. Today, we're discussing how Ryan and his brother built the largest gutter franchise in the US, why Ryan attributes his rapid success to culture, Ryan's growth plans as CEO of Evive Brands, and how Evive will be focusing on compassionate care for homes and people. We hope you enjoy the show, and please follow us as we drop new episodes each week on Wednesdays.
All opinions expressed by Cliff, Justin, and podcast guests are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinion of Phrenosity and Pursuit of Profit. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as a basis for investment decisions.
Okay, I want to get to Evive and all the cool things you're doing over there, but we have to start with the brothers that just do gutters. I mean, this brand. So, Cliff, I think we first learned about the brothers, I want to say 2021, like a year coming out of COVID. So we're a year into the pandemic. Half the brands out there are shut down, right? They're not even operating. A lot the brands that are operating, the earnings claims are just, a mess, right? Like no one's really bragging about numbers. And here comes this little brand that installs and repairs gutters with a full P&L in their item 19 of every, correct me if I'm wrong, right? Every franchisee that was operating the year prior, a full P&L breakdown showing year-over-year growth for every single franchise owner.
I believe that is correct.
And we're like, holy, like, so the brand, is they're outdoors, right? So they're staying outside the home, so they don't have that issue of going in people's homes. And it's like, what a cool little concept. And you sold a bunch of franchises. Now, little did we know, this turned out to be, in my opinion, one of the best home services brands that's launched in the past 5 years. I mean, it's the first brand that comes to mind for me. I heard one of your franchisees once say, I went to the confirmation day and you could have been doing anything. You could have been an HVAC company. You could have been an insulation company. I knew you were going to be successful. What does that mean? Like, how do you describe, you talk about this overnight success that took 20 years. There, for every brothers that just does gutters, there's dozens of other brands that go nowhere in home services. What is it?
You know, I mean, there could be a lot there, but what that franchisee described at the confirmation day is culture. And it's this word that it doesn't mean anything anymore. Culture, you say quality, you say service. These are all meaningless words because everyone claims to have it, but nobody does. And so we've never claimed to have culture. We just have it. And it's one of those things that whether it's the Frandev person telling people, wait till you see their culture, everyone's like, okay, cool. But when they step into that building, it's palpable. The people that we work with, we enjoy each other so much. We run a business on transparency, right? We've always shared our numbers since like 2010 or 11. We share our numbers with our employees, from everybody, the installers, the marketers, the salespeople. So I believe, you know, culture eats strategy for breakfast. So we've always been a culture first, always treated our employees great, our franchisees great. And we always said, hey, if we do all the right things, the money will follow. And I think that's what you're talking about is what they feel. And we're very proud of that.
Yeah, absolutely. Justin, you made a comment about the earnings claim. I just want to go back to that. We glaze over things at times, and I really need to spend some time on some of these things. We've been doing this a long time, franchising, and this is what we see. We see new brands, they load up on the earnings claim, they begin selling franchises, no one comes close to the earnings claim, not even close. This is a pattern that I have seen year after year after year, unfortunately, of brands saying, I'm doing $1.5 million, therefore you can too, right? Sell a bunch of franchises, no one even hits 750 grand. Like not even close. You are that outlier. You're that case study where you put in this incredibly comprehensive earnings claim, pages, over a dozen pages of detailed earnings claims. Not only did your franchisees hit their earnings claim number, but you've exceeded your own original earnings claim. That needs to be said, I'm sorry. In a world of over-promising, under-delivering, grossly over-inflating earnings claims, and none of these people achieving that number, good for you, man, because you are an outlier. You actually did what you said you were going to do. You delivered for the franchisees. You can elaborate on that all you want.
Oh, I'd love to. So my brother and I, we didn't know anything about franchising. We didn't know anything. I mean, we learned everything for the first time as we franchised, and we just assumed that you have a unified chart of accounts, that you have P&Ls every month, and that you help your franchisees make money. I mean, we coach down to the net profit with our franchisees. And in the beginning, it was me and my brother. We were the coach for the first 10, 12 franchisees, and we had everything down to the net profit for every one of them. And we didn't know necessarily, like, is this good? Is this bad? Is this industry standard? It's just what we thought was a best practice. And then when we teamed up with Franchise Fastlane and they saw what we had, they're like, you got to be kidding me. We've never had this sort of data integrity all the way down to the net profit. And it was really cool. And we did have to adjust things because there's different models, like, right? Some people are owner operator, they do sales, they do admin. So there is an adjusted net earnings claim depending on how you spend that. But again, it goes back to our transparency. That's how we've always done business. And I remember going to conferences and having like some other franchisors of service brands like, dude, you guys are freaking killing it for us publishing your whole item 19. They were joking, but probably not joking because if you're choosing between two brands, like you go with the one. And it was really cool to just continue to see franchisees exceed, you know, it's kind of like the 4-minute mile. Well, this guy did $1 million in his first 2 years. I could do it my first year. And we saw a lot of that. And then we had a lot of growth. And, you know, with the growth came some challenges, of course. But I'm a big believer in just, hey, if it's anything, we published even the bad, low performing ones because you gotta see those too. So I'm not big on like just trying to show all the good, show it all.
I heard someone ask you once, like, what would you recommend to a new franchisor? And one of the things you recommended was post full P&Ls, like give a detailed earnings claim. And the problem is most franchisors can't or don't want to. The earnings claim is a sales tool. Those numbers can be manipulated. People have to know that. And if they're not showing a lot of detail, there's probably a reason for it.
Yeah. And sometimes it's just they didn't start with the right infrastructure. And you've got 30, 40 franchisees that you're trying to get to, like that you've never been able to track, and they're doing well. There are I meet a lot of franchisees that make lots of money, but they don't have the infrastructure as a franchisor to capture anything past gross profit. And I think that becomes a challenge as you grow, is to go backwards and then get your legacy owners to start sharing that kind of detail. But because, you know, we started it that way, it's been easier to keep up with it. But agreed. I love the transparency. And a lot of franchisors, unfortunately, they just concentrate on selling more franchises. I look at that's down on the list for me. I know it's important, but my goal has always been that the franchisees are having success in making money. If they're happy having success in making money, it'll be Fran Devil take care of itself. You know, it'll sell itself.
100% right. The problem with the numbers is that a lot of these leaders, they're not even involved in the item 19. They're leaving it to the FSOs because you're hiring FSOs saying, look, we don't know this business. You tell us what you need, aggregate the data, package it up, as Justin said, manipulate it. It is heavily, especially when they're making a lot of exclusions. And that's why I wanted to bring it to our audience's attention. You didn't do that. You did something that very rare to see is a full P&L breakdown. And again, we kind of just glazed over things. Right. And the audience doesn't realize how important that one thing is. Plus, it shows how much integrity you have as brand leadership. The fact that you're fully disclosing everything. So, you're making our life easier as consultants.
You have heard from so many exciting franchise brands in a podcast, and you may be sitting there thinking about which ones could be the best fit for you. If this is the case, Give us a call. We provide a free consulting service to prospective small business owners like yourself, and we will help you take a disciplined approach to determining which brands could be the best fit for you. Call or text us at 561-277-3710 or visit www.franosity.com. That's www.franosity.com. We look forward to hearing from you.
I want to test you here. Cliff and I have worked for franchisors that have these really nice sounding mission statements, and they talk about their values, right? And we invite prospective franchisees in, and it's like, oh, look at this big happy family. And then they go home, and meanwhile, it's a completely toxic environment. Everyone's fighting in the company. The franchisees hate the franchisor, which is why we stopped working for those companies and became consultants. You have these seven core values. So I want you to name the core values. How did you come up with this? And what do they mean to you and to your organization?
So I have a love-hate with core values. I love running a business by values, but I hate that most organizations just come up with some core values in a boardroom, throw them on the wall, and people don't even believe that they're doing it. So the core values, the way we come up with them and the way I can recommend coming up with core values, especially like as a, you know, for the brothers at Just Do Gutters, I'll talk about that, is a lot of times we picture our best employee, our best franchisee, and we describe them. You know, if I could clone Cliff, you know, he's the best, what would it be? Well, he's loyal, he cares, he goes over to above and beyond, he's honest. So that's a lot of how like you start to build those things. You're trying to figure out who you already really are, and then you're just using that now as a litmus test. So the core values for the brothers at Just Do Gutters is we care, right? So worth, excellence, communication,
appreciation,
reputation, and excellence. Or was it excellence?
Education, excellence, and leadership.
Yeah. What's so funny is I didn't realize it spelled We Care till about a year or two ago. I'm sitting there, we're going over the core values. I'm like, oh, I wonder if it spells anything. And it was like, so leadership is the one that didn't fit into We Care. But that is our overarching theme, is leaders developing leaders developing leaders. That is how we built the company, and those core values, you know, help us stay within the lanes.
Culture is everything.
Culture is everything.
You mentioned some books on some other pods about culture. What do you recommend to some folks?
You know, I don't think I've read a ton just specifically on culture. I'm like a self-help book junkie. You know, I just read Atomic Habits.
Yeah.
Really thought that was very cool. What was the other one? Rocket Fuel was huge. I mean, that I'm a integrator. My brother's a visionary. And, you know, there's been times over the years where we like butt heads because he just wants to like change the world tomorrow. And I know what it takes to change the world. And that book really helped me embrace his gift as a visionary and not want to be so like, no, Ken, not yet. No, stop with your ideas. So he has a gifting there. I had a gifting there. So Rocket Fuel Traction, which is the foundation of EOS, which is, I recommend everybody runs their business on the EOS operating system. So yeah, always kind of reading some sort of self-help.
That's great. A lot of people don't do that. They don't invest enough time in growing themselves. And there's a treasure trove of books, podcasts, everything just to be smarter than you were yesterday, or have more wisdom, or stay out of trouble, or manage risk better, or have a better relationship with your manager. But you said something that's very interesting. We knew nothing about franchising, right? And you're the personality where it has to be perfect. And your brother's the personality that says, let's just do it and figure it out while we're, let's build the plane in flight. And I think that's interesting. I think Justin and I can relate to that statement and understanding where, do I keep pushing him back? That energy, that creativity, that almost impulsive behavior where you're just constantly changing and implementing and doing things. It's like, we haven't even implemented the last five ideas. You're on six.
Yeah.
Every organization goes through this. You're the executor. He's the idea guy, but you're the one that actually has to make it materialize. You've done a great job doing that with a lot of different ideas.
Thank you. So No, big believer in that. And I love that you can read a book that took somebody a lifetime to figure out something and you can digest it in 5 hours. It's unbelievable. Right. And I'm a big believer too. Like, there's times where, you know, people come to you for advice. You're the leader. And I find it's my duty that I'm not going to just say the same thing. I can't be the same person I was 20 years ago. They're like, hey, man, I'm having trouble in sales. Well, make sure you give them a firm handshake. I mean, if that's all I ever learned about sales and look them in the eye, we're in trouble, right? So I feel it as a duty as a leader. I look at ourselves as a well. And when they come to put the bucket in and pull something out, I can't be dry. I have to have nice, fresh water for my team.
Justin, can we explain to the audience like how large this brand has become? You want to get into like where you started, number of units, and where you are today, open and sold in development, and then we can continue on with your other investments that you've made at eVive.
Sure. Absolutely. So the brand was started, I mean, my brother started in 1999 by himself on a gutter truck. I got involved in 2002, and we came up with the idea of franchising in 2007. Kenny would have franchised the next day, and I don't think I still would be ready to franchise because it wouldn't be perfect. So it took us 7 years to franchise. So in 2015, we actually were ready and sold our first franchise, and we had about 12 to 14 going into 2021. And then we, like you said, you know, it caught wildfire. The consultants, the brokers, everybody saw what we were doing. They hopped on, and, you know, like you said, it was in COVID and couldn't believe what we were doing throughout that. So we're over 100, 120 maybe. I think we only have like 4 or 5 that are sold, not open. We open pretty much in 60 to 90 days. The only time we have people in snow sold not open for a long time is because we're timing it. I don't like to launch somebody in October, November to get the tail end of the busy season into the slow. A lot of times we'll wait to give people a late winter, spring, March, so they have a better ramp.
Justin, another differentiator, well, one of the biggest issues in franchising is sold not open, right? It's a huge issue. It's like how many locate 400. Well, how many are open? 30. Right. You're just selling units. You can't open them. You can't find space. Your people aren't doing well. No one wants to open up their second, third location. No one wants to invest in more trucks. And again, that's a huge differentiator. And the audience, you know, we're gathering a lot of steam, and people are starting to catch on to all the nuances in this business. Like, be really careful. Like, ask a lot of questions, turn over the stones. You're that brand where we sell them. They're successful on unit number two. We execute, we open them. And then they start adding more trucks and expand into the territories that they purchased multi-unit, 3, 4, 5.
There's a lot that has to happen, but a lot of brands can't even sell them. You got to sell them, you got to get them profitable, and then you got to get them scaling.
Yeah.
Right?
Process. I've also noticed, you know, selling somebody a 3-pack and a 1-pack, they have the same ramp. You can't expect that somebody who bought a 3-pack starts with 3 locations, 3 trucks, 3 crews. They're learning a brand new business. And so we've given a little bit of grace, and we definitely have sold some people too much territory that they haven't grown into in the time we wanted them to. But I also don't love the unnecessary pressure of, you know, you bought 2 territories, it's been 6 months, you have to open. I'm sure there's a happy medium there that we're still working. You know, we've got a lot to figure out at Brothers. Don't get me wrong. You guys have been very generous with your praise. But that's something I noticed, like 1 territory, 5 territories, they have very similar ramps in the first 18 months. And then you can start to see where, you know, they can start to grow a lot faster.
It's true. The opportunity to scale years down the line gets bigger because you own more turf. But in the first 6 months, the 2 more territories is not making a difference.
Not at all. I mean, a little bit in marketing because you get to a bigger pie to market to, so they might have more leads.
Ryan, touch on everyone in franchising, prospective franchisees. Favorite question is any national accounts. They love that question, right? National accounts. From memory, you had a relationship with National Home Builders, and I think it almost destroyed your business due to the razor thin margin, the account receivables, right? Talk about that, because everyone wants something and they don't understand the unintended consequences of working with a Lennar, a Hovnanian, a Pulte. They don't get it. What's your story?
It's blood money. Those types of national accounts are blood money. They'll put you out of business. You'll be the busiest you've ever been and have no money, right? So in a franchise model. There's just not the margin to buy a franchise, pay royalty, have all the support, letter trucks, you name it, that goes into a proper business. You cannot, I cannot, other brands might, maybe an insulation company, I don't know, but it's really not what you think it is. I'd much rather work for a remodeler or roofing national contracts and then a home builder, because their whole goal is cheaper, cheaper, cheaper. I mean, I've seen the guys, like, I'll just do the gutter thing. I've gone to the companies that do gutters for like a Toll Brothers or Pulte. You're supposed to place hangers in a gutter every 16 to 18 inches. They're as far as you can reach apart. Wow. Because they have to cut corners somewhere. So if that's their goal for buying a franchise, go start your own business, because the only way you can make money at that capacity is literally doing all the work yourself, not having royalties, not having marketing. An owner operator in the gutter business who doesn't have any of that overhead.
It's funny you mentioned that. So we were, Justin and I were looking at an investment property. We were looking at Lennar Homes, and we went inside some of the homes that they were building. And something just didn't look right to me. And you want to know what it was, Scott and Gore? They're not 16 on center. They're 24 on center. Studs are 16 on center. Not them. They're 24 on center. Multiply that by the hundreds of thousands of homes that they build on lumber savings or steel. You're right. There's always a way that they find. They're either going to hurt you, the vendor, not pay you, be unreasonable with payment, float you out 120, 190 days. Meanwhile, you have fronted all the money for these materials, labor, everything.
Yes. So there are national accounts we are working on. There are ones that make sense, you know, especially when it comes to cleaning gutters and homeowners association.
Definitely.
There's definitely national opportunity. So that's starting to happen.
Nice.
We grew as fast as we did. We were just keeping the wheels on this thing. And now that it's settled into a cadence, we're really working on that next level stuff.
And you're right. And I want to clarify, and thank you for clarifying. I'm not sure. National accounts are phenomenal. It's these national home builders specifically that I'm taking issue with. Yeah, I love national accounts.
Absolutely.
Property managers, remodelers, they're all about charging a premium. The finish is perfect. It's a remodeling job. They want to charge a premium, and a homeowner wants the job done right.
And they want the value. You know, they want to know that the guys are insured, that they're lettered. Like, when you're showing up and a remodeler is using you, you're a representation of them. In new construction, they could give a rip if you're blasting foul music, if you have your shirts on or off. It's just about, I remember losing an account over a nickel a foot. You're talking, it was a matter of $10 or $12 per house. And they were like, sorry, man. I'm like, it was blood money.
National accounts are great. No one should be buying a franchise because of national accounts. And no one should be waiting for a franchisor to build a business for them. It's not going to happen. We always used to say at our last brand, we may be the sprinkles on top of the icing on top of the cake.
That's it.
You got to go bake the cake. You got to ice the cake. It's not going to be the most profitable work, but it's just another benefit that you get from the franchisor.
It's so true.
Love it.
But don't buy this brand for that reason.
They're fragile. Allstate all of a sudden says, you know what? I got this other guy. You know, they're good for a time, but I like what you said. Hey, if it's there, it's a sprinkle on the cake. It's not the
That's right. I used to like to tell people, do you know why the royalty is 6%? No, why? Because they do 6% of the work. You're going to do 94%. Like, it's your job to build the business. You're doing the heavy lift. Don't expect people to build your business on a 6% royalty. Please.
I love that.
Ryan, I want to talk about finding the right talent and retaining people. One of the things we hear all the time, especially when it comes to the trades, is where am I going to be able to find these people? They're unreliable. There's no good people in my area. And then they start working on a pro forma and the numbers just don't work. Why don't the numbers work? Look at your labor. Your labor's through the roof. Why? I feel like I'm going to have to overpay by 20% to retain people. And that can't be the right answer. When I hear somebody, first of all, I love the names. Chacho, Capa de Ferro, like only a New York franchisor, right? This Chacho guy, this was your guy onboarding franchisees. These are impressive people.
Yeah.
Like, where are you? To be clear, you're not operating in New York City. You're operating in the Hudson Valley. We know it well. It's a rural area. You're finding top talent and retaining these people, and they're growing through your company. How are you doing this, and what do you suggest to your franchisees?
Whew. When you first started asking the question, here's the biggest thing that anybody who's hiring needs to know. A players don't work for B leaders. Simple as that. Employers lie all the time. They're so sick of somebody saying they have experience, they hire them and they don't. And employees are so sick of someone saying they have culture and a career opportunity and they don't. So you have to actually be the company that you say you are, just like you expect the employee to be the employee they say they are. So at a foundational level, it has to be a good opportunity, right? And it wasn't pay, it wasn't benefits. When we recruited Brandon, he took a huge pay cut because he felt the culture. I think he was a director of operations for another franchise. He started as an onboarder because we were hitting that big ramp. And I'm like, we need a killer to onboard franchisees, but eventually run an onboarding department. And who knows? So he took a pay cut. He built out the onboarding department. He hired other people. He eventually then worked up from there. Then he's the director of operations. He's phenomenal. But I believe it was culture. I believe it's because we did what we said we were going to do, and we always do it. There's times we grew the company, not because Ken and I wanted more money. It's because I didn't want to lose good talent that hit a ceiling. So growing the marketing department, growing all these different things, franchising, becoming part of Evive Brands, these are all plays to create opportunity. So I don't know if that directly answers your question.
Justin, that is such a great quote. It's so true. We hear people complain every single day to be able to find good people. Larry Wingett, this guy resonated with me because it's like, the employees suck? No, you suck. That's the issue. You're the B leader. You're the C leader. The issue that you're having, entrepreneur, is you're not impressive. No one wants to work for you. That's your problem. That's why your employees are constantly turning over. You're just not a good leader. And no one ever puts emphasis on leadership. It's all buy a brand. What's the earnings claim? No one ever looks within saying, why would anyone want to work for you?
I do want to add one thing. So for brothers, because it is the trades and it is more difficult to find and retain, I will acknowledge that we have created the most ridiculous career ladder. We call it the skills ladder. So when somebody starts, they literally, you have their pay of what they can make by what position they're in and what skill that they have. So if you have somebody who's green, it's like, hey, here are the skills that you need to be proficient in to get up, you know, let's just say we started at $18 an hour, to get 19, to get 20. Well, I want 25. We point to the skills there and say, well, then you need to be able to run a truck. We've given our franchisees every tool to onboard, and it's all digital on an LMS. They can watch videos. They have to read books.
I love it.
But it's all about making better people, not better employees, and then it all works out. So we are giving our franchisees an enormous amount of tools in recognition that, yes, you know, in the trades, yes, you do get people that ghost you. You do, you know, you set up 5 interviews and 1 shows. These are things that happen, but you have to be relentless in your pursuit. You will find good people if you're a good leader and you're doing all the right.
I love that. Justin used to do that at PTI. You want to raise? What elevate your game? You need to take this test. You need to do this self-study. You need to read these books. You need to be better at kinesiology. You need to be better at this. It's expensive out there. What are you doing to add more value to the organization to demand a premium of pay? I heard that you guys have your installers read the 1-minute manager if they want to raise. Is it true?
Yeah. So they read a book at every step in this phase. The very first book is Who Moved My Cheese?
Love that.
Attitude is Everything, the 12 pillars. When they are about to run a truck, they have to read the 1-minute manager because they're going to start to lead somebody. So these are all the tools. And rather than, and this is why we built it, because I felt convicted that when a guy comes to me, he could be working for 6 months a year. Hey, boss, I need a raise. Well, what are you talking about? Well, I want a $5 raise. And I might laugh. For $5 more an hour, you need to run a truck. You got to show up on time. I'm like, why does it take someone asking for a raise for me to finally tell them what it takes to make more money? Right. And that's why we built it, is because I don't ever want somebody to know, they need to know how to make more money. So let's publish it. We all know in our head what it, you know, takes to make more money.
I want to make a comment. So when someone would describe Derek Jeter and what makes him so great, they talk about intangibles, right? There are certain things that don't show up in the stats that make him great. And I think this is the importance of attending a confirmation day or a discovery day, because a lot of the things you're talking about, like, anyone can say, and it's hard for a franchise fast lane to describe. You really have to go and experience the culture and meet the people and get a, and like, you feel it, right? When you walk into a corporate headquarters, if it's like super stuffy and awkward and it's like, I'm uncomfortable even be around these people, or like the way you and your employees talk, it feels to me like a family.
Yep.
But again, you can only get a feel for that by going and being a part of it, spending a couple of days with someone. I just think it's so important.
It's such an important thing. And I actually do remind people, because they're so blown away by the culture, and sometimes that's the reason that they're buying it. And I will just always put an asterisk. I'm like, that is our corporate culture. Like, just so you know, like, that is, and you have access to all these people in that culture. But when you go back to Boise, Idaho, and you hire your first employee, you are responsible for your culture.
Love it. I have two more things. We'll do an Evive on the balance of the call. Just confirm these stats, because I think they're impressive. The gross margin goal for Brothers That Just Do Guzz is 54%. This is a part of a culture too, where there is intense laser focus on profitability margins. Labor is 20%. And
I believe so.
And material cost of 23. That's what you're seeing.
I mean, that's the benchmark. If that's our average, great. But we see, in a franchise system, you see lower and higher. But that is definitely the benchmark.
Right. I mean, but the fact is that there's a KPI. There's a number. A lot of brands, they're just rudderless, running around, figuring things out. You know where you want to be.
We have KPIs down to the net. Vehicle percentage should be 4%. Credit card fees, overhead, facilities. Like, it's all like perfectly balanced. And franchisees get to make choices. When they rent a facility for $3,000 a month and it's supposed to be like $1,200, that's their choice. And sometimes they'll kind of say, hey, I'm not making enough money, but they've made a lot of choices in overhead. Or they overpay people because they're not a great leader and they're not charging enough. So franchisees have so many levers, it's scary.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they could decide to not charge the right amount. They overpay some people. They pay too much in a facility, and they can really hurt their own margins in the same exact system that somebody's having amazing success in.
Love it. 60% of your training is on soft skills. That is something, it is amazing to me. I invite five contractors to your house. Five. Four walk in, very pleasant, fit, and everything's nice. They leave their shoes on, they walk on your rugs. One guy shows up, puts booties on, done.
It's so simple.
Isn't it? Like, that's simple. Yep.
And it is crazy that some of our training is like so basic, you know, like calling a client on the way, introducing the crew before you start. These are, I mean, most of it is just absolutely incredible by those little things. You're just leaps above your
competition. Totally agree with you. And my final comment, Justin, I'm handing it over to you. You had a sales guy do 1.6 million selling gutters in 1 year. That's incredible.
And that was many years ago at a lot less dollar per foot than it is today. But yeah, we have many. I think there was 25 salespeople that sold over $1 million last year in the system, and it continues to grow. I'm waiting for our first $2 million rep, but yeah, given an average sale of like $1,700, $1,800, very impressive.
What's 1.6 million today? What do you think? If inflation adjusted, 1.6, is it?
Easily 2 million that same year. If we had the card pricing when he was selling, he's now the brand president of Brothers too, the guy that hit that record. He's the brand president.
Oh, really?
Gorbachev. Never heard that name before, but.
Really appreciate you sharing all that with us. Remarkable story. Absolutely love it. I am fascinated by it. I am. It's not like we're splitting atoms. It's not healthcare. You didn't create a stent. Like, this is gutters, junk removal, paint the house, do drywall repair. Like, it's unbelievable. What's what the millionaire next door said, right? It's the millionaire next door. You're the millionaire next door. Justin, take us to Evive.
I'm going to throw another book out there, since we're throwing out a lot of books that I think you could bring into your fold. I just finished reading a book called Unreasonable Hospitality. None of us are food people, and none of us ever want to be. But so this is the guy. There's a lot of great chefs in the world, right? He wasn't the chef. So he was the guy who ran the dining room for 11 Madison Park in New York City. And when he got involved, they were maybe ranked 50 in the world in top restaurants. And before he left, it was the number one restaurant in the world. And A Reasonable Hospitality is about just that. Make people feel special. And you have multiple customers that you're serving. You're serving the end user, the homeowner, and you're serving franchise owners.
Yep.
But it's just, again, we're not in the restaurant business, but just getting you thinking about how to make someone feel special, really cool.
Love it. I wrote it here.
Give it a read. It's a good audiobook. Evive Brands,
yep,
is compassionate care for your home and health.
Yep.
Talk about, how did this, so it's Riverside.
Yep.
Riverside acquired Brothers That Just Do Gutters, and then you became CEO of Evive Brands. Walk us through how this journey went on.
Yeah, happened. So they put us in the portfolio with three senior service brands. We're the first home service brand, and we're hoping to build out and add a lot more home service brands as well as other senior brands if they become available. So it's a really cool platform that from the time someone purchases a home to the time that they need to be placed in a home or even, you know, an estate sale, we will have services for them. And I thought that was really cool. And it was a great opportunity for me. I have so much passion around helping franchisors. And Cliff and Justin, thanks so much for all the accolades for Brothers, because we did feel like we built something special, that there is something different about it. And our passion is to share that with other franchisors to help them implement like the stuff that you talked about and build that. So this has just given me a great opportunity to help build already amazing brands and then acquire other ones.
So how did you get, I mean, this is a far departure from Brothers, right? So executive home care. So you have executive home care, assisted living locators, and then Grayson's Estate and Business Liquidations. How did you get in those industries? Are you targeting home care? Is it a trend? What's going on there?
So they were there before I got there.
Okay.
Right? So that was Riverside's strategy, was to build out that portfolio. We got added into that portfolio. I thought we were going to get added to like Threshold Brands or something like that, that had all more home services. But I guess because, you know, we were the largest infrastructure there, that we're going into that platform, we're going to continue to build it out. But it's been really interesting to learn these completely different businesses, only to find out that they're all the
same.
That's
right.
Like home service, healthcare, it all comes down to serving our franchisees, providing a frictionless approach to not only our franchisees, but their clients. So it's been really interesting. While their businesses are completely different, all the problems, challenges, and opportunities are the same. Tech stack, people, retention, support, all the things that I believe I have I'm very operational. And we've got a killer Fran dev team. So that's great. They can go do that. And my goal is to just make it the best. I'm always looking at, for a franchisee, if I can find 1 or 2% somewhere that they can go and drop into their net, I'm so happy to help them find just a little bit more money. And that's my continual goal.
So again, the three other brands, Executive Home Care, which is a in-home senior care,
yep,
franchise, right? So we're staffing, we're sending out caretakers or CNAs to care for elderly people who want to age in place,
yes,
right? Continue living at home as they grow older. A very high staffing model. You have assisted living locators, which is kind of the opposite as far as business model and staffing is concerned. It's kind of a self-employment model, right? Where, how do you, similar to what Cliff and I do for franchises, right? We work with people, we do a needs analysis, we match them up with the right franchise. An assisted living locators franchisee would spend time with a family, get an understanding of what their needs are, what type of care they're looking for their elderly family members, and then match them up with the right facility.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, I like that model. Care Patrol, assisted living locators, the concept of cataloging all senior facilities, memory care, skilled, yep, nursing facility, nursing home, assisted living, independent living. And it's the truth. My wife is in healthcare. This phone call happens every day.
Yeah. And it's funny because most people don't know that industry exists. They just start, Green Acres is near us. Let's go look at it. They start doing it themselves. And it's just so awesome that they can have an expert in their area that knows the pros and cons of all the facilities. I think that's it's a really, really cool model. And it can actually really scale. It can start as home base, but you can hire salespeople and marketers and really scale that business. Nice business.
Yeah, I happen to like it. I've referred to that category, that brand, that category. The executive home care, is that medical, non-medical?
Non-medical. I think Medicare in some states will pick up a portion of it.
It's mainly companionship care.
Yep.
Yeah, nice.
Talk about Graysons. I think most people are familiar with senior care. Talk about the estate sales model.
Yeah, so the estate sales model is really cool that when, you know, again, you're dealing with end-of-life stuff and things that are emotional. But yeah, when, you know, mom or dad dies and the kids are all out of state and they have this estate with all sorts of things in it, and they've got to, one, probably sell the house, and then two, get rid of all the items in it, the Graysons comes in and they literally stage the entire house. They price all the items. They do all the marketing online and in the neighborhoods. They've got like followers that just, they look for Grayson sales at estate sales and they go to them. Like, you'll see that they'll be like, hey, what's up, Bob? You know, they see it every weekend at their sales. And it's a really incredible way for them to maximize how much they can get for the items in the estate and not just like throw things in a dumpster or try and do it themselves on Facebook Marketplace. So it's a really great thing. And they also do business liquidation, kind of the same thing. You know, you're going out of business or someone dies and they have this big, huge shop or business, they can get rid of everything in it for them, or they're moving to a smaller facility. So it's a really, like, a lot of white space. It's relatively, you know, out in California and it's growing. This is kind of the one that we think is going to hit a run that, you know, a lot of interest, a lot of things happening. And it's a really cool business model. You know, I like it a lot.
Justin, we met with a guy doing this in Canada, remember? Yep.
We learned about
and
this model.
I was taken back by, this guy basically said, we don't even ship it. We advertise, tell me if that's similar to you. It's all localized. You are coming to the house, the driveway. You're driving away with the kitchen table. We're not shipping anything.
That's it. Yeah. And you can make a really good amount of money. The family makes money. You make money. And now with AI, I mean, you know, it's like, oh, I love these scissors. It's like it just goes finds them online for you. So with technology and stuff, they're able to utilize more and more to price things properly and not, you know, sell a $1 million Rembrandt thinking it was a, you know, something for the bathroom.
Yeah, right, right. How many units? Give us some stats here. How many locations?
So for Graysons, around 50 owners. I can't quote units on that one off the top of my head. And for assisted living locators, I believe they're right around 150. And for EHC, they're smaller, around 12, 15 units. And Brothers.
Okay, got it.
I mean, there's so many people that they understand the size of the market for aging baby boomers, right? We all hear this stat in franchising, 10,000 people turn 65 every day in this country. There is just plenty of runway. This is not ending anytime soon. And senior care sometimes is a good fit, but sometimes people don't want to deal with the staffing of that business. So I love these alternative types of models where they can go after that market in a different way. There's going to be a ton of estate sales. There's going to be a ton of people who are going to have to go live in a home at some point.
Yeah, you're getting into executive home care. This is a passion play for people. There's a ton of money to be made in there. It is staffing, but it's a passion play. They're typically had a really bad experience with a loved one or just really want to make sure people are taken care of. And when done right, like, how cool that somebody who might have been 6 months away from being in a home, they're getting an extra 2 or 3 years in their house because of the care they're receiving. So we're seeing like more of a passion play for that type of a business versus people that are looking at the stats and numbers and saying, well, this ain't going away anytime soon. But again, the best of them are compassionate because you are dealing with people at they're most likely, if there's an estate sale, there is a loss, right?
100% of our clients who have invested in that business dealt with it themselves with their own family members and just understood how much, well, usually the company messed up in some way and they felt like they could do something better.
Yep.
But they also saw the need and how important it was to them.
Yeah,
to have
that's
that
what we've seen too.
You're in, we like four categories, four themes, and you're in two of them. We like anything involving the use of tools. Number two, graying of America. We like anything involving the aging, graying of America. You fit that multiple times. We like anything involving beauty, vanity, and we like anything involving the humanization of pets and animals. I think those themes will continue for decades. And I think they're all, in my opinion, right now, 2024, I think they are all immune to AI risk and definitely Amazon risk. And no one's going on Amazon to find a caregiver for their 85-year-old mom between the hours of 8 a.m. and 4 p.m. I mean, it's not happening, right?
I think AI will definitely help in elevating and assisting all the people in these businesses. It's going to make things better, but yeah, you cannot, you're not going to replace a guy hanging in a gutter anytime soon.
I agree.
Or somebody.
Yeah. In one of Yuval Noah Harari's books, I want to say it was 21 Rules of the 21st Century. He's talking about AI and robotics disruption. It's actually the example that he uses is senior care as an industry that will not be disrupted. People have to care for people.
Yep.
At least not anytime soon. So
anything else on Evive that we should know, the audience should know about you coming on today?
Yeah. I mean, if you're a franchisor listening to this and you're at that critical part of the business where you might have hit a ceiling and you're looking for additional help, resources, technology to get your franchise to the next level, consider, you know, Evive Brands if you're in the home services or in the senior living space.
I think it's, first of all, I appreciate you coming on. I mean, you are like the first brand that comes to mind when we think of successful franchisors that just continue to perform year over year. Love that you're at the helm of these other brands in the senior care space. Excited to see what you continue to build with them. And I think anyone looking for a franchise should be considering these brands. And if you have an interest, let us know.
Great, Ryan. Great having you on. I love how much time and energy you put into empowering entrepreneurs. Think about it. It's just selfless. I love it.
Thank you so much for having me as well. It's been a real pleasure.